Hi, everyone, and welcome to Women on the Edge of Evolution, Awakening Our Power to Co-Create Our Lives and Shape Our Collective Future. My name is Paula Dowd, and I'm the Program Director of Feminine Power Global Community, the organization producing this event. I am delighted to welcome you to part 34 in our series today, featuring honored guest Susan Schachterly on the topic Women as Leaders, Women as Healers, How to Find Your Power to Change the World. But before we begin, I want to take a moment to thank all of you for your active participation in this dialogue, both on our Feminine Power Global Community Facebook page and on the Women's Evolutionary Cafe following each call. As of this week, we have over 9,000 members in our Facebook community, and we continue to be inspired by the incredible support and enthusiasm that is coming in from all corners of the globe. If you haven't yet jumped into the conversation and would like to connect with other women who are participating in the series, we encourage you to join us. You can find the link to our Facebook page in the confirmation email we sent you for today's call. We also want to thank our co-sponsors. Without their support, this series wouldn't be possible. If you're joining us for the first time today, the way the call will work is that I will introduce Claire Zammit, who is one of the two visionary women behind this groundbreaking series, and then she will introduce Susan and today's call topic and process. Claire is the co-creator with Catherine Woodward Thomas of our Feminine Power Transformative Courses designed just for women. Together, they co-lead a global learning community dedicated to empowering women to realize their highest potentials and make their greatest contribution. Claire is a transformative educator, a speaker, and a writer. She has a gift and a passion for designing and delivering content that gives access to life-altering paradigm shifts. Her work emphasizes the relationship between personal and social transformation and the power of creating learning communities that support insights and intentions in a way that they become lasting change. Claire is currently completing her doctorate in the field of transformative learning and change at the California Institute of Integral Studies, and she's researching the life-changing transformations of women in our year-long Feminine Power Mastery Program. She is also the co-author of the upcoming book, Feminine Power, Awakening to the Creative Force of Life. So welcome, Claire, and I know I speak for all of us when I say how much we are looking forward to your dialogue with Susan today.
Thank you, Paula. Thank you so much. Good evening, everyone, and welcome if you're joining us for the first time this evening. We are a global community of over 50,000 women who are standing with and for each other to realize our highest potentials and make our greatest contribution to co-creating our collective future. And we have a new part of our program that we started this year, which is the Evolutionary Women's Cafe. At the end of the Q&A session of each call, we create a space for women from around the world who've been listening to these dialogues to connect in small groups on the phone, just like in the live workshop, to go into even deeper discussion about topic of the day. If you'd like to join us, registration is free, but you will need to register separately for that part of the program. Just click on the link in the email that we sent you with the confirmation codes for tonight's call, and you'll automatically be signed up and sent an access code. And I will share the information at the end of the call for any of you who haven't yet signed up. So today I'm absolutely honored and delighted to be here with author, teacher, and coach Susan Schachterly to engage our topic, Women as Leaders, Women as Healers, How to Find Your Power to Change the World. What if we were to discover that the monumental shift in culture catalyzed by the women's movement in the 60s and 70s had only but scratched the surface of our possibility, power, and potential as women? Women today have unprecedented access to freedom and power that would have been unimaginable to our feminist foremothers. As a result, many of us now intuit our sacred obligation to leverage the boon of that privilege so as to further the project of emancipation and cultural evolution that first lit the fire of the feminist revolution. Despite the deep call to leadership and the tremendous obligation so many women are feeling to co-create the future of our world, we often struggle with a deeply rooted sense of powerlessness to affect large-scale change due to the traditional roles we've played under patriarchy. Susan Schachterly has cultivated an extraordinary wisdom glean from decades of experience assisting women to step out of powerlessness and into their deepest potential and possibility for impacting the world. Susan is the best-selling author of The Bitch, The Crone, The Harlot, and the novel Between Darkness and Light. And her work focuses on the power women bring to the world when they recognize, honor, and express their gifts that are inherent in feminine energy. In her work, both across the United States and internationally, Susan assists women to recognize who they truly are and the part that they are called to play in helping to reestablish the balance and an ever-deepening sense of possibility in our society. And what I especially love and appreciate about Susan and getting to know her is that she's both a visionary and a pragmatist. She really sees the larger picture of the possibility for women to step up and powerfully co-create the future, and at the same time to develop very specific skills, practices, and tools to really support us to really embody and awaken and express our power to its potential. And so I couldn't imagine anyone that I would rather be here this evening to engage our topic, women as leaders, women as healers, how to find your power to change the world. So welcome, Susan, to Women on the Edge of Evolution.
Thank you so much, Clara. I'm so excited to be here. I've been looking forward to sharing some thoughts and ideas with you and with the extraordinary women who have joined this call. This topic is so dear to my heart and so crucial, I believe, at this, especially at this time in our history, and I'm always so eager to share it with women who are of like mind.
Well, I'm so excited to dive deep into the conversation. Now, women as leaders, women as healers, this is the subject of an upcoming book you've been researching and working on very deeply.
Yes, I've been working on the book for a while. I'm wrapping up the interview process and have interviewed women from all over the world and actually a couple of men also to get a sense of how people perceive the impact of the divine feminine, the gifts of the feminine, on the practice of leadership, especially when we choose to regard the practice of leadership as in some way a spiritual practice.
Mm. Beautiful. And I'm wondering if you might maybe start us off by sharing what attracted you to this particular topic and the larger context that you see about the significance of women's leadership in the time that we're living in.
Oh, I'd love to. I began writing this book. My earlier book that you referred to, The Bitch, The Crone, and The Harlot, I wrote after 25 years or so of working with women all over the world and recognizing what happens as women ripen. I don't refer to women aging. I refer to them ripening, like luscious pieces of fruit. And I wrote that book to address what I had learned about the process that women tend to go through as they move through that ripening time of their lives. I then moved on to this topic of women in leadership because one of the things that I found routinely was that women are feeling called, and I'm learning this everywhere I go, all the different cultures that I work with women in. I'm noticing two things, Claire. I'm noticing that women are tending to feel a kind of restlessness, as if there is something beyond their current situation that they're called to. They don't necessarily fully understand what that might be, but there's just a sense of restlessness and a desire to be doing something of a larger nature. Mm. At the same time, what I am noticing routinely with women all over the world is that because they have, in so many cases, and in every culture, including our own, learned often early in life to feel small in their lives, to think in a small way about who they are and about what's possible for them. And so there's this sort of internal conflict that I notice in so many women where there is this sense of calling, something beyond where I am that I should be doing, that I could be affecting. And then the yeah, but. Then the indication of the small way of thinking and feeling. But I don't know how to do something larger. But I don't have the money. I don't have the power. What could I do? And as I noticed all this and recognized how often women who are carriers of an extraordinary package of gifts, of skills and qualities that are the life-giving and potentially world-changing skills and qualities, that these women so often hold those things back because they have learned to feel small in their lives. And so there's this sort of internal conflict that goes on between the two. I then began researching the whole process of leadership, mm-hmm. and how that impacts what happens in governments, in churches, in educational systems. And what I found was that historically we have been so deeply out of balance in the direction of the masculine for as long as I could research back to. And what that has meant is that the emphasis has been on action, whether it's been wise and temperate action or not. And it's also often been on competition, and along with that a kind of a need to win, to be better than, or to conquer, things like that, all of which are necessary aspects of the masculine in particular situations. But without the tempering of the feminine, the nurturing, the insight, the intuitive wisdom, the creative and sensual and spiritual inclinations, the process that the masculine tends to go through as leadership is regarded tends to be a harsher and not a healing sort of process. Am I making sense here?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so as I looked at all that, I thought, my gosh, we as women are natural healers. We are natural leaders. The way we lead shows up differently than the way men lead,
mm-hmm.
but it's no less impactful. It's no less important. And we historically, as women, we have often throughout time in various clans and tribes been the medicine people, the spiritual advisors, the healers, the oracles, the soothsayers. Without that being present in current day experiences, we cannot achieve the balance that we have to achieve for the planet to heal.
Mm-hmm.
And that role, that historical role as healers and medicine people and oracles, that is an eternal role of the feminine. That's, mm-hmm. that hasn't gone away. That hasn't changed. We may have forgotten to some degree that that's who we are, but that has always been our role. Therefore, if we aren't feeling small, thinking in a small way about who we are and what we are capable of, what is possible for us, it means we are not bringing forth that full range of gifts that are so essential. If we are not bringing them forth, if we are not stepping up as women, it is virtually impossible, in my estimation, for the planet to reach any real kind of healing. What we bring as women is more than half, probably considerably more than half, of what is absolutely essential for healing and well-being, because we are wired to incline toward connection and relationship.
Okay.
Without connection and relationship, there cannot be oneness and unity and healing and collaboration and all those things.
Mm-hmm.
So what we bring is what can promote and facilitate healing of all of the myriad issues across the planet, hunger, war, violence, poverty, homelessness, all those things that will never be healed through political action or military force or anything like that. We need to bring it. And that means we need to respond to this calling and step forward in what are perhaps new ways mm-hmm. for many of us and perhaps deeper ways for many. But to step forth also with, I guess the word is pride, and I don't mean arrogance, but what I mean is recognizing what we bring and the impact of it and feeling that deeply rooted connection to the source of those gifts that allows us to step forward in a quiet and powerful way to bring the healing that we are here to bring.
Mm. Well, absolutely. There's just so much context that you just laid out there, and so many different dimensions of what you're bringing forward, and Susan, that is absolutely critical for us to take in.
Well, and may I add something else?
Yeah, go right ahead.
This is, I think, just so important a point. I'm talking about women choosing, and it is a choice, mm-hmm. choosing to live from a larger purpose.
Yeah.
And when I was doing research for my book, The Bitch, the Crone, and the Harlot, I learned so many things. It was an extraordinary experience to research the topic. One of the things that I learned that was so meaningful to me was about various ancient tribes that would hold a ceremony at a point at which a woman's children had grown up and moved out into their own lives, and they no longer needed her the way they had needed her when they were small and when they were living with her. The tribe at that point would hold a ceremony intended to initiate that woman out of her role as mother with a small m, meaning mother to her own family, and into the larger role of mother with a capital M, meaning mother to the larger family, to the larger community. And I read that and I thought, my gosh, this is exactly what we need to be doing. We need to be choosing to initiate ourselves into this larger purpose, whatever that means for each of us. And it means something different for every single person. But choosing to initiate ourselves into that larger purpose so that we are bringing these gifts into every aspect of our lives in ways that simply facilitate, as a kind of a byproduct, facilitate healing and resolution everywhere we go.
This is such a big and important point that you're making, because I think, you know, in the essence of what you're saying, I mean, the context being, we really are in this turning point in our human story.
Yes.
And we have the potential to break through to unprecedented possibilities for our human flourishing with all the extraordinary advances in technology and development that we have. And we equally have the power to actually break down and really cause the end of society and culture.
Yes, absolutely.
And this masculine orientation, these different ways of knowing and being and relating inside of this masculine expression of power, exclusively masculine expression of power. You know, it's really interesting when Catherine and I started doing research into this as well. We looked up the dictionary definition of the term power. It was like to do, to act, to make something happen, to command control over others. We see that, you know, either we've adopted that way of holding power and had to disconnect from ourselves in the process in some way, or we've been like, you know, if that's what power is, I don't want to have anything to do with it. And, you know, we've become somewhat powerless to really have any leverage to bring forward our voice or our values.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, what I really he's saying, which is like the is just absolutely critical, is that we need to find a way to begin to source power that's authentic to who we are and is also, secondly, inside this larger context, because for us to really be able to reclaim an expression of the feminine that's going to mean something when it comes to creating the future of our world, it needs to be at this world-centric level of development. That just the feminine for care for me and mine is really insufficient to actually cause the shift in our world that we're needing.
And that's exactly, that was stated so beautifully. That was exactly what I thought about when I read about this ceremony that the tribe so often held for women whose role was changing. Mm. And it occurred to me that, you know, these people waited until the larger family could initiate them into that larger purpose. We can choose to do this for ourselves. What we can choose is, first of all, to choose to initiate internally to that larger purpose. And from that point, to choose to initiate externally into that larger purpose through taking the kind of action that is shaped and formed by the wisdom and the intuitive insight and the spiritual inclinations that are such a part of the feminine. And you're absolutely right in my estimation what you're saying about power. First of all, I think it's crucial that women define power for themselves. Mm-hmm. And from that point, to begin to look at how do I access my own wisdom, my own personal, deep, profound, internal power, and then translate that into meaningful action that brings healing and changes lives. That's where we need to head. Those are our gifts.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, it's a curious thing to notice that we've lost a lot of these rites of passage into womanhood that have been traditionally the markers for us to go through that transformation of identity into seeing ourselves as mature adult women, such as, you know, a lot of women are not getting married or getting married much later in life. Mm-hmm. A lot of women are not having children or having children much later in life. And so, you know, it's extraordinary. So many of my students report their internal experience as being that of being very young girls as opposed to grown women.
And how interesting.
It's really what you're saying is that it's like the rite of passage into our womanhood really is about, you know, what makes us an adult is that we become responsible and accountable to something larger than ourselves.
Yes.
And so it's that, you know, to awaken to the fullness of our power as women reclaim the essence of that power to generate, it's going to come hand in hand with exactly what you're saying, this rite of passage, this initiation, this beginning to identify ourselves as mothers to the whole.
I love it, and I think it is an inevitable part of the process for those women who make that choice, that initiation into the larger role. As I said, it is a choice, and we can ignore the choice if we choose. We can continue to think and feel small in our lives. And women who are thinking and feeling small show up as small in so many ways, in the way they relate to others and certainly in relationships with men, in the way they conduct their careers or run their businesses, the amount of money they do or do not make, the way they feel about their bodies, all sorts of things that are indications of that tendency to think and feel small, to think and feel like someone whose role is to be in the background, serving as the glue that holds everything and everyone together, but never bringing her own gifts and her own needs to the surface. Mm. We cannot afford that kind of small thinking and feeling any longer. There isn't time. There is too much for us to do and too much to catch up on in order to achieve the balance that we're talking about and be able to move forward. And a piece of what is required for that, I believe, is women choosing to relate to each other in profoundly loving and tolerant and respectful ways. And of course, that is not always the case. The small side of the feminine is very small, you know, can involve things like gossip and backstabbing and man-stealing and all sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't afford to stay in any behaviors like that and still choose to bring our gifts forward. It's one or the other.
So you've worked with individuals and groups of women all over the world in all different cultures. Mm-hmm. What do you see as the core things that we need to really develop to be able to evolve beyond these this identification with powerlessness that, you know, has emerged in a patriarchal culture? And how do we get there? What have you seen as the awarenesses or the practices that we need to really take on to evolve out of this?
It's such a wonderful question, and it's so crucial. I think the most basic thing that women need to be willing to address in order to move into this larger sense of purpose is the need to establish a deeply loving relationship with themselves. Essentially, as I said to a client the other day, to choose to fall head over heels in love with themselves. We as females, because we are so inclined toward connection and relationship, we tend to learn very early in life how important it is. We learn this from many different sources, how important it is that we be liked and approved of and accepted and part of a group and be popular and pretty and all those things. Which, you know, is okay. But I think, Claire, that in 25 or maybe 27 years of working with women, I don't think I have ever met anyone who also learned early in life that it was essential to create a deeply loving relationship with herself.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens then is so often women get very good at being out there and creating relationships with others, not necessarily relationships with great potential and depth and substance, but lots of relationships, and to neglect that relationship with the self. And that means, of course, that we put ourselves at the mercy of all sorts of external things and all sorts of other people. And when we choose to enter into the process of falling head over heels in love with ourselves, we get to that place at which we feel so deeply rooted in our own value that we can afford to step into this larger purpose. We learn through that process of loving, we can learn to trust who we are, to rely on our wisdom and our own inclinations and our own insights in ways that we don't learn when we are looking outside ourselves for validation and a sense of who we are in the world. And so I think that that is a crucial piece of it, that falling in love with ourselves. And there are many ways to do that.
I was going to say, what does that look like? Like how do we do that?
You know,
what does loving ourselves look like?
Well, I think there are many mm-hmm. different things that can go into it, and I'll mention a couple.
Please. Add into the question, because it's like, because I absolutely agree with what you're saying. I think that this is the foundation from
which we can access the power to generate, to co-create all of these things. But I'd love to also hear, just in terms of the description about how we do that and what gives access to it, it's like, and how do we do that in a way that it doesn't end up as narcissism?
And
it's actually generative. Does that make sense?
It's a crucial question. Yeah, crucial issue.
In a culture where postmodern spirituality is so inherently self-oriented and not inside the sort of larger context, that we tend to swing between the polarities of being self-absorbed or self-abandoned. So how do we find something that's kind of an evolution out of that duality?
Yes, and those two extremes, the self-abandonment and self-absorption, are both such uncomfortable places to be,
right,
and such unproductive places to be. There's some very simple steps that women can take to begin creating this relationship with themselves. One of the things that I suggest to clients who are ready to embark on this part of their journey is that they think about how they create relationships with others and begin applying some of those same things to a relationship with themselves. Begin to really explore what I'm truly feeling about XYZ, whatever the topic might be. What am I afraid of? What am I really afraid of? What do I dream of? What do I want to create? What do I resent? What gives me great joy? What bores me to tears? To just begin with the simplest things. And this is important because so often when a woman will come in to begin working with me, I will ask some very simple questions, just like some of the ones I just asked. I will say things like, well, what do you want in your life? And you know how often women stare at me blankly and say things like, I don't know, I've never really thought about it. And I ask how it is that they've gotten to whatever point in life they've reached without thinking about what they want.
Mm-hmm.
And what I tend to hear is, I have spent all of my time focused on what everyone else wants from me.
Mm.
Now, obviously we need a balance between those two. But when a woman can choose to spend some time becoming lovingly honest with herself about her true feelings, her true interests, her true desires, her true passions, and begin to forge a sense of connectedness with the self, it's a place to start.
Mm-hmm.
I believe also that in reference to your question about narcissism,
mm-hmm,
when a woman chooses to understand herself as a conduit for the divine, for the energy of the divine, for the wisdom, for the power and the compassion and the love of the divine, it's much less likely that she can slide into self-absorption and narcissism.
Mm-hmm.
The two don't work well together.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that creating a deeply loving relationship with oneself, which of course has to involve forgiveness of self, it has to involve tolerance for oneself, as well as the kind of very simple beginning of the sort of self-awareness that ideally we would have entered into much earlier in life, and often we don't. Another thing that I think is absolutely essential is that as we start thinking in terms of this larger purpose, and this initiation into that larger role, that we also begin looking at the possibility of forming collaborations with women of like mind. So many times, I will talk with women who will say to me things like, I'm so upset about the rate of homelessness in my city, or children and hunger, children going to bed hungry, children without shoes to wear. homelessness, war, all sorts of things. And women will tell me how upset they are about these things and how offensive these things are to them. And then they will say, someone should do something. Someone should make this change. And my response now is, how about you? Why don't you do something? And this is where much of the tendency toward thinking small shows up. Because it's at that point that I often hear a lot of the yeah, but stuff. You know, yeah, but I don't know how. Yeah, but I don't have enough money. I don't have the education. I'm all by myself. I don't have any power. No one listens to me. What could I do? Well, this is where creating meaningful and productive and forward-moving collaborations with other women of like mind is essential. When I was writing the book, The Bitch, the Crone, and the Harlot, one of the things I learned in my research was that in the United States alone, there are more than 40 million women between the ages of 40 and, let's say, 55 or 60. That's just in the United States over 40 million. I don't know how many worldwide. I mean, it's a staggering number. Mm-hmm. When you think about even just those 40 million women being of like mind, linking arms, and moving across the planet, bringing their gifts into every situation and taking well-informed action in every situation, well, the entire planet would change.
Yeah.
And there is a fabulous Ethiopian proverb that I write about in the next book, Women as Leaders, Women as Healers, that speaks to this so beautifully. When I first read this proverb, it just knocked me out. The proverb is very simple. It says, when spider webs join together, they can tie up a lion.
Mm.
Now, I had read many years ago in graduate school, I don't remember why I was reading this, but I had read about this very phenomenon, that spiders can choose to interweave their webs, and in doing so to create something that becomes so powerful it operates like a net and could actually hold a small animal. So here's this proverb just speaking to that fact. And I looked at that and thought, holy moly, this is exactly what we as women need to be aware of. When we find ourselves thinking, I have something in the world that I want to change, we can look for others of like mind, we can interweave our webs, and we can change the world. Now, that doesn't mean that women by themselves can't also change the world. The woman who started the group Mothers Against Drunk Driving, who started it out of the tragedy of losing a child to a drunk driver. There are all sorts of stories where women have found that depth of conviction within themselves and said essentially, this must change and I will change it. And this is something I love about women, that we have this capacity for that kind of conviction and that strength. You know, that, I mean, we can keep going through all sorts of things. We can set our sights on a goal, and no matter what happens, keep moving toward it. It's extraordinary. What if we did that in reference to the issues all over the planet that currently create suffering and lack? What if we overlaid that conviction that we carry, as well as the gifts we carry as women, onto those issues, joined with others of like mind, everything would change.
Absolutely. Well, I think it's really true. I mean, for the first time in our human history, I think we as women in the West and globally are actually holding the balance of power in terms of determining how there are enough of us to have access to freedom, to power, to this kind of agentic capacity to really have a voice and make things happen on a large scale, that if we really woke up collectively to that power, we literally do have the power to influence and impact which way this goes. And there are two things we see really in the women that we work with that are in the way of really rising up and stepping up. And I'd love to get your thoughts on this and how we might really develop our capacity to really rise and awaken to this power that we really, you know, is in our hands, is the calling that we're all feeling that's upon us,
yes.
What you're saying,
yes.
At the beginning. We're all restless with it. It's a calling that's on the lives of women right now to,
yes.
Rise. And
absolutely.
So the two things that we see, this there's a way that somehow taking responsibility at that level feels overwhelming. And the only way that we're able to do that is to somehow go into identifying with these masculine structures or ways of holding power. So do you have any, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that, about the kind of unwillingness to really take responsibility for the larger level. I mean, we're very good at taking responsibility for other people's feelings.
Right.
And taking
right.
care of everyone in our immediate
yes.
environment, but being willing to step up and stand alone and be the one to actually be the solution to generate, to be responsible, to care that much on that level without
yes.
getting overwhelmed, without backing down, to be willing to, you know, let the kind of, you know, passionate anger and outrage we feel kind of propel us to really stand at an unprecedented level to make things change. You know, what's going to give us access to that?
Well, it's an absolutely essential question. And I think it takes us back again to that, to the whole issue of thinking and feeling small in our lives. When we are feeling small, the tendency is to question ourselves, to question our motives, to question our abilities and our power and our capacities, and to limit our vision, to take our vision, which our birthright is to have a vision of the unlimited realm of possibility, as far as I'm concerned, to be so aware of that realm that we can operate within it with great peace and grace and joy. But when we are feeling small, the tendency is to limit that vision back down to the very human level and to look at ourselves and whatever we're being called to take responsibility for, to look at it through this internal lens of smallness, where we start asking questions like, can I really do this? Who do I think I am? No one in my family has ever done this. Mm-hmm. How will I pay for this? I don't have time for this. What would my husband say? What will my friends say?
What you're saying, that feeds into the second thing I was going to ask, is this sort of deep anxiety with uncertainty. Not knowing how to do it or how it's going to happen or you know, you're totally going to like the second thing that we see at the same time as well. So yeah, what do you see about that? How we can overcome that anxiety of not knowing how?
You know, it for me is a deeply spiritual sort of an issue. Many teachers whose work I follow say, and this also shows up in a book some of your listeners may have read called The Science of Getting Rich by Wallace Wattles, which is about a great deal more than making money, although it is about that too. But he says in that book, and then various teachers whose work I have followed have also reiterated this point, that we trip ourselves up when we get focused on the how.
Mm-hmm.
When we start trying to figure out the steps and to start second-guessing ourselves and our passion and our commitment, that's when we trip ourselves up. That's part of the feeling small stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But when we recognize ourselves in our true nature as spiritual beings, as conduits for the power, the wisdom, the compassion, the joy, the love of the divine, we get to that point at which it is much easier to release the need to understand the how and to simply flow with the passion of our commitment and allow each step of the how to unfold before us.
Mm-hmm.
And when that happens, the steps that unfold tend to be so much grander and so much more
powerful than anything we could have planned if we narrow our vision down to that lens that contains every flaw we think we have and look at the process through that lens. Am I making sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I think it really comes, I mean, when I think about, for instance, the woman who began Mothers Against Drunk Driving, or women anywhere who have taken a cause and moved forward with it, my guess is that where, I'm sure that they had those moments of self-doubt and moments when they were exhausted and wondering why they'd ever started this and things like that. But my further guess is that underneath anything like that, there was the passion and the conviction I'm referring to that remained largely unwavering and unshakable, where even though this process may be difficult and I'm not sure I know what I'm doing and, oh, my God, why did I even start this, underneath it all is that clear gut-level, soul-level understanding that what I am thinking of doing is so important. Again, back to, you know, what I was saying earlier, this can't continue, it must change, and I will change it. And that is something we as women are so capable of.
Absolutely, and in taking that stand, we can just look to see where the next step is.
Absolutely, absolutely. There is there's a line in the Old Testament, I think. Now, much to my mother's chagrin, I don't know the Old Testament well, but there is a line that she has pointed out to me in the past. I think it's somewhere in the book of Proverbs. And it says something about the love of God, the word of God, the wisdom of God being a light unto my feet. And my mother, I remember saying to me many years ago when I was fretting about not knowing how to do something and not having a plan in place and everything. And I remember her saying to me, reading that verse to me and saying, that verse means that we get enough light to see each step.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't say that the light illuminates the entire path so we can figure it out.
Right.
It says one step, and then the light moves forward a little bit, enough to illuminate the next step. And that's all we need, one step at a time.
And ultimately, that's a much more feminine way of creating.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And
yeah.
Allows for a great deal more collaboration. Yes.
Right, because it's like inside these just, you know, exclusively masculine ways of knowing and being,
yeah,
that we are only able to create what's controllable and predictable.
Yep. Absolutely.
And, you know, what we're really needing to bring forward are things that have never existed before, creativity, solutions, innovations.
And things far, yes, things so far beyond anything we might have imagined.
Right, which can only be created in the way that you're describing.
Yes, absolutely. As a matter of fact, I am currently in this very process, if I may share just a
moment.
Yeah,
please
do,
because this is such an important point, Susan, that you're making here.
Well, it's just crucial, and you know how often we can have these moments of understanding and then suddenly we get the opportunity to try them out and see how well
yeah.
they work.
Yeah.
Well, that's sort of where I am in a particular situation right now. I am initiating a large event for women,
mm-hmm.
which is not yet on our website, but will be soon. And it's coming up in a few months. And we've got already a set of presenters and speakers and teachers, remarkable women from all over the world who are going to participate in this 3-day event. And this is just going to be a life-changing event.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is so interesting to me because the idea for this event came to me in a split second while I was at a conference. In a split second, I knew this needs to happen and I will do it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I had no idea how to do it. I have put together events before, and I've done, you know, keynote speeches all over the world and various taught workshops and things
mm-hmm.
like that. But this is something different and something large. And I got this idea, this instant hit about what needed to happen, what kind of event this needed to be, and I could hear myself deep inside saying, yes, okay, mm-hmm. I will do this. No clue how to even start. But I told several people, this is what I'm going to do, and this is why we're going to do it. And do you know that as soon as I did that, as soon as I made the commitment, people just started coming out of the woodwork. People who were exactly the right people to speak on different topics that are important. People who are going to be perfect for arranging all the details of the event. It's just extraordinary. And it reminds me so well, it reminds me of this Old Testament verse that I'm mentioning. One step at a time, that's all you need. Don't worry about 10 steps ahead. That will take care of itself. But it also reminds me of a quote by the German philosopher Goethe, who says, and I'm just paraphrasing here, but he says, as long as we waver, which to me means question, you know, doubt, analyze, that sort of thing, as long as we're doing that and we haven't made a firm commitment to whatever it is, then nothing much can happen. Mm-hmm. There's always indecisiveness. There's always the yeah, but stuff.
Right.
But he goes on to say, as soon as we make a firm commitment to whatever it is, the universe or spirit or the divine rushes in with all the things we need to shore up that commitment and put legs on it. The money, the people, the opportunity, the location, whatever it is we need. But our task is to make the commitment first. Then those things can appear. This is a very feminine way of doing things.
Absolutely.
And a powerful, powerful way. And an exciting way to be able to step back and just watch how, as we move forward in whatever wisdom we have at the moment, how these other things unfold in front of us. It's extraordinary.
So having that much faith in ourselves and faith in life seems to be where we need to go. Be able to be willing to step up.
Yes, absolutely. And that, again, comes back to choosing to operate from that larger sense of purpose, from that larger awareness of who we are and what we are called to be as conduits for the divine and as the bridge builders, mm-hmm. those who connect and who give life.
Mm. Absolutely. So we're getting close to the time where we're going to open the lines up and allow our listeners from around the world to ask you some questions.
Wonderful.
On this topic. But before we do, I just want to ask you about this. I love this Ethiopian proverb.
Isn't it wonderful?
It's actually one of the most profound things I've heard for a very long time because it really illustrates this power of we. And I think
yes.
that's really, I know we've spoken about this in our conversation the last day or two, and you were sharing your thoughts about feeling the kind of emergence of a new wave of the women's movement that's entirely new, that's about our awakening to our personal power, but also this power of our collective voice and what we can
yes.
catalyze and cause together. I'm wondering if you can just share a little more about that.
Yes, absolutely. You know, when the suffragettes did what they did, the miraculous things that they did and the heroic things they did back in the early 20th century, they opened many doors for others, and they were true heroes and accomplished a great deal. We then had, interestingly enough, about a 40-year lull between what the suffragettes did and along through everything that they were involved in. We had about a 40-year lull or so, and then we had the feminist movement in the 60s after 40 years, and that movement was focused in great part on anger and needed to be. We needed the energy that comes with that. That happened after.
Okay.
About 40 years after the suffragettes. Well, I see it now as about 40 years after the feminists.
Mm.
And so if we look at these 40-year increments,
mm-hmm.
what I'm thinking is we now are in a place where
we have opened doors, we have vented the anger and found the energy and the voice that comes with that. And now it's time to have moved beyond all of that, beyond the girls are better than boys and all that other stuff, to have moved beyond that and to get to the place at which we recognize our true calling, our true task, our true being, and enter into collaboration with each other, with men, with animals, with every life form, and certainly with our whatever our perception of the spiritual is, in order to facilitate healing. It now is a matter of unity and oneness that I believe this next phase or wave of the women's movement will be about and needs to be about. We have done so much work in preparation for this. And this is why this image that I mentioned earlier of women of like mind linking arms and mm-hmm. moving across the planet, bringing healing into everything, is so compelling for me. Because if we have chosen to enter into that place of collaboration, we become a force that is essentially undismissible.
Mm-hmm.
And that means wherever we go, we bring our gifts and healing occurs.
Mm. And where, if you, because, you know, often there is an inherent orientation towards collaboration and co-creation that we have as women.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also the structures from our evolutionary past that has us kind of compete with each other and covertly undermine each other as well when the pressure's on. We see this, you know, so often, you know, that women can on the surface be very supportive of each other and then, you know, when the pressure's on, betray each other in very deep ways. So I'm wondering what you see about the development that we need to engage to be able to really unite inside this higher calling that's upon us.
Well, I think, once again, we're back to, are we choosing to think and feel small in our lives? We need to compete and struggle and conquer when we are feeling small.
Mm.
When it feels as if we have something to prove, we need to be better than. But when we have chosen to do the work necessary to step into that larger purpose, larger perspective, and into a creative mind rather than a competitive mind, that's when we can begin to realize there is plenty for everyone. We don't have to fight tooth and nail to have enough. We don't have to struggle to get by, but we do have to step out of the mindset of struggle.
Mm-hmm.
And into the mindset of collaboration, creativity, and unity.
Mm.
And this, again, is another reason why the Ethiopian proverb is so important to me, that these spider webs who interweave their webs and create something so powerful, they go about that with a common purpose in mind.
Right.
They are of like mind. If they were not, then they would never create something so strong. We must do the same.
Right. So it's that awakening to this larger context and this larger calling.
Absolutely.
That's a kind of a big enough shared context for us to really kind of awaken out of this identification with these small perspectives on ourselves and the possibilities of our life and this sort of juice and power that actually comes when we allow ourselves to expand and get that big.
Yes, absolutely. Allowing ourselves to expand. There's a wonderful line from another excellent book called Your Invisible Power by Genevieve Berend. And she says in it, your mind is a center of divine operation.
Mm-hmm.
And that means constant expansion into something beyond what has been before. And it also means fuller expression. And what that means to me is that if I am choosing to operate, to think of myself and to show up in my life as an expression of the divine in the world, then the divine through me asserts fuller expression
of itself and is constantly seeking more life for all, less life for none. And if that is my mantra, more life for all, less for none, then I can't help but be in that collaborative mindset.
Mm. Beautiful. Thank you, Susan. So we're going to take some questions. If you have a question for Susan, you can press star 2 to raise your hand if you're listening on the phone, or you can enter your question in the instant teleseminar message window that you see on your computer screen if you're listening to the webcast, and press enter. So we'll give you all an opportunity to do that. I just want to ask you, Susan, what are you working on right now, and where can people go to find out more about your work and actually have a deeper experience connecting with you?
Well, thank you. I would love to have people visit our site at Thinking Like the Big Dogs. They can find out more about our coaching programs for women, and they can also, at that site, register for our upcoming free teleseminar called Thinking Like the Big Dogs, which is actually a seminar that presents tools to get out of the thinking small state and into the mindset that not only generates greater success, but that leads to profound and lasting change. And if people will sign up for our newsletter on the site, we can keep them posted about this upcoming Find Your Power, Change the World women's event that I mentioned,
mm-hmm.
and keep them posted on that so that if they're interested in attending, they can know how to go about that. Also, if women are interested in learning more about my book, The Bitch, the Crone, and the Harlot, they can find that at bitchcroneharlot.com.
Can you share something
and,
about the title of that?
What the title
represents?
Absolutely. I titled the book The Bitch, the Crone, and the Harlot because those three words, bitch, crone, and harlot, have been used throughout the ages to denigrate women and in some way keep women in their place, whatever that means. And as I thought about that, I realized that with each of those labels, whereas generally speaking when they're used in society, they have a pejorative meaning, with each of them there is actually a wonderful gift. And if we focus on the honorable and noble use of each of those gifts, we become agents of sacred change in the world. For instance, the gifts of the bitch, now this is capital B, archetypal
mm-hmm.
bitch, this is not the the bitch who works in the office next door to you. So the gifts of the archetypal bitch are power and possibility.
Mm-hmm.
But she has learned to use her incredible power to make things happen and create change, to use those gifts for the greater good, not
mm-hmm.
just for her own benefit.
Mm-hmm.
The gifts of the archetypal crone are wisdom and insight. And she, again, has learned to use those for the greater good, for the deepening of wisdom and spiritual experience for everyone. And the gifts of the archetypal harlot are passion and awareness. And she is a woman who has learned to live with her senses so open that she's constantly taking in more information than most people, which means she is more informed and can make better choices. So each of these words, I wanted to take each of these words and redefine them on the basis of the gift inherent in each. And if I can tell you just a very quick story here.
Please do. I'm on the edge of
okay.
my seat here. It's just wonderful.
Many years ago, I was teaching a workshop about women and relationships. And this is a workshop for men. I was the only woman in the room, which had its challenges all by itself, but there were maybe 25 men there, and they ranged in age from, I think the youngest guy was about 21, the oldest man in the room was 82 years old. And I found as we moved through the first half of the day that the word bitch, with a small b, was being thrown about fairly freely. And I thought, you know, we need to define our terms here. We need to get clear. So at one point I stopped and I said, gentlemen, you're using this word bitch a lot, and I want to be sure that I fully understand what you mean. So can you tell me, please, when you call someone a bitch, what does that mean? And one of the many in his probably mid-20s, kind of the ringleader of the self-proclaimed studs in the group, raised his hand and said, when I call a woman a bitch, it means someone who won't do what I want her to do. And a lot of the other, especially the younger men, were nodding their heads and saying, yeah, that's right. Well, suddenly from the very back of the room, a quiet little voice emerged, and it was the oldest man in the group, as I said, 82 years old. And he said very quietly, to me, a bitch is a woman who gets in a revolving door behind me and somehow gets out ahead of me.
Hmm.
And the whole room just got completely silent.
Wow.
And from that point forward, there was never another expression of the word bitch in that same fashion. And I thought, what a fabulous way to define the archetypal bitch.
Hmm.
She gets in the door behind me. She doesn't push me out of the way. She doesn't try to roll over me or conquer me. But somehow, she gets out ahead of me.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing.
Mm.
So in any event, that's why I titled the book the way that I did. It presents these archetypes and defines the terms on the basis of the gifts inherent in each. And these are all gifts that women gain fullest access to at about the midpoint of life.
Mm.
So this is really a guidebook for women who want to move into the midpoint of life and into the second half of their lives in a seamless and joyful way.
Well, it's just such a wonderful work, and I just got a copy, and it's just the depth of wisdom and insights that I've seen from the pieces I've read is just extraordinary. So I would encourage people to go to Amazon's the best place to go.
Amazon, you can absolutely get it on Amazon, and many bookstores have it, but certainly Amazon is the easiest, probably.
And Women as Leaders, Women as Healers, that's a forthcoming book?
Yes, that shall be out, I believe, right after the first of the year.
Wonderful.
People
who sign up to your mailing list will be the first to know about when that's going to be available.
Absolutely. We will keep people posted on that and on the women's event and other things that we're doing.
Great. So your website one more time where people can go to sign up for your...
ThinkingLikeTheBigDogs.com.
Great. Thank you.
And BitchCroneHarlot.com if they want more information about that particular book.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. So if you'd like to find out more about our work, you can visit FemininePower.com and download a free 75-minute audio called Awakening the New Feminine Power, How to Become Your Authentic Self and Co-Create the Future of Our World. And each week we like to shine the light on the evolutionary offerings and activities of our event partners and co-sponsors. And there are a couple of things that I'd love to share with you this week. And the first here is Awakening the Impulse to Evolve. It's a free online series, just like Women on the Edge of Evolution, but includes men too. You can join 18 of today's most inspired spiritual luminaries for a groundbreaking conversation on how you can evolutionize your life and participate in co-creating the future. Presenters include Deepak Chopra, Michael Beckwith, Brian Swim, Jean Houston, Barbara Marks Hubbard, Ken Wilbert, Michael Dowd, and Craig Hamilton. Just visit evolutionaryspirituality.com to find out more about that. And Integral Enlightenment. Our friends over at the Academy for Evolutionaries are pleased to announce that you can still register for their 9-week telecourse, Integral Enlightenment, Awakening to an Evolutionary Relationship to Life. You can learn more about the course and download a free audio called The Key to Evolving Beyond Ego at academyforevolutionaries.com. We also want to tell you about Donna Carey, who is a wellness expert, and how you can stress less and sleep well, two of the biggest issues that affect our well-being and our ability to live an inspired life as women are excessive stress and poor sleep. These issues, when left unaddressed, become a vicious cycle that can feel impossible to break. But there is hope. Donna Carey's practical coaching sessions will lower your stress levels and improve the quality of your sleep in just 3 to 4 sessions. Check out our website for more information or to schedule a session at naturalsleepspecialist.com. That's naturalsleepspecialist.com. So again, if you have a question for Susan, you're listening on the phone, just press *2 to raise your hand. If you're listening online, you can just enter your question into the Instant Teleseminar message window and press enter right now. So let's go to a live caller. There's someone here in Rochester, New York. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for calling. This is Sue Emmel.
Hi, Sue.
And by the way, I don't know if you've heard BITCH as an acronym. It's a wonderful acronym that changed my resistance to it. It means babe in total control of herself.
You know, I have heard that, and I just think that's wonderful.
There's actually a whole line of T-shirts and caps and things that a woman can buy or give to a female friend of hers to empower each other more with it and to sort of defy the negative charge around it.
Wow.
And thank you for addressing a lot of the underlying issues that I think we all know as women are between us, the toxic competition that we have with each other. And I'm glad that you keep identifying it of when we're thinking small, that's what's coming up. So whenever that happens, is that what you, do you recommend actually, like we all pretend it isn't happening, but when it does happen, when another woman is acting small, do you recommend actually speaking to it by saying something, maybe kindly and lovingly, but because that's the feminine thing to do, but to say, you can be better than that, or let's be better than that, or what would you recommend to say? Should we speak to it? Should we pretend it didn't happen? I mean, that's what we've done for centuries, and it doesn't
work.
That's
a really great question, Sue.
It is an excellent question, and I'm sure that Claire has some ideas about this, too. What I think is so important is and is the loving and respectful thing to do is to with grace to assist the women around us to recognize the options, to recognize that there is a different way, to be able to say something like it feels to me or it sounds to me as if you are feeling such and such, threatened or intimidated or resentful or something, and I'd like to help with that. How can I support you in moving beyond that into a more resourceful way of feeling, into a more resourceful way of behaving? And just by saying something like that, what we are doing is expressing our support, and we are also gently mentioning the fact that there are options. There is a different way. You can move into a more resourceful way of being. I am here to assist you and support you in that if you choose to. And then it's important for us to be able to bless and release those who choose not to.
Mm-hmm.
Claire,
absolutely.
What would you think?
I think that's great. You know, I was just thinking about it. It's such a great question. It's such a big issue. And I think it's something we have to really shift into what you're saying, Susan, to grow our collective power as women. And I remember years ago, I was at the women's conference, and I was listening to one of the women speak there who, she was the CEO of one of the very big companies. I can't remember, but one of the biggest companies in the world. And she was saying, you know, where men have become so powerful is that they really do have each other's back. And if a man is kind of out of line, one of his colleagues will pull him inside and say, hey, what the hell was that? You can't behave that way. You have to shut, you know.
Right.
So kind of a different version of what you were presenting,
right.
Susan, there. But it was the masculine version of that. But they have a talk. And they hold each other accountable. And they say, hey, you have to be held to a higher standard. And
exactly right. And when we ignore those things in each other, that's what I meant when I said the loving and respectful thing to do is to point that out.
Absolutely. And so I think it's absolutely critical as women that we begin to hold each other accountable to be living and relating inside this larger context.
Absolutely.
And then that's really shaky ground because we have such a very, very deep toxic waste dump going on, and we're really not we're powerful in potential, but even the word power, I think, brings up so much fear within women, which we've been using in a way to our advantage for thousands of years, and now we have to come out of that into a kind of power which isn't a masculine power, because we already have too much of that energy on the planet, and we can't use our feminine power, which was to seduce and cajole, you know, using a false kind of femininity. I don't really know what true feminine power is yet, and I'm going on 70 years old, but I'm very motivated to really learn it. My ears are up like a Doberman, you know.
Yeah.
What is real feminine power? And a kind of a power that isn't going to intimidate my sisters,
right?
Because my sisters are more dangerous, I feel, than men ever were. Men are puppy dogs compared to my sisters when they feel like that I'm a challenge to their sense of power, which I don't want to be, but, man,
well,
any advice?
So these are just wonderful points that you're bringing up, and I think it's really exactly what Susan's saying. And, you know, in our work, we define feminine power as the power of relatedness that gives us access to this ability to self-express, and that's exactly what Susan's talking about, and to create the kind of safety and trust between women.
Yes.
That would enable us to tell the truth to each other and hold each other accountable. It has to do exactly with what Susan was saying, is that you want to create a sense of relatedness and commitment, that you're really on her side, not on her case.
That's good. Thank you.
That is so important. That is so
connectivity.
When women step into that, what I think of it as the small side of the feminine, where they undermine each other and sabotage and, you know, try to beat each other out with men and that sort of thing, it again is that indication of thinking and feeling small, as if the only way I can be safe in the world is to be better than someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And when we have that clear indication that someone around us is feeling that kind of smallness and the insecurity that comes with that, because if we're small, we can't feel safe. That's really when we need to be reaching out with a firm kind of reassurance that we care for that person and we're there to support them as they choose to move into a more resourceful way of being, and to allow them to make that choice. And some will choose and some may not. But
right.
Boy, that whole business of women creating a sense of safety for each other is crucial.
It is really crucial, because we're undermining our own selves, and we've got to have that unity amongst ourselves, and then we still have to accomplish the unity with men, because you know they're. Well, that's. I almost think that'll be the next 40 years. Will be the unity with men.
Well, and you know, and who knows? It may be. But I think, really, as we've said tonight, the larger a perspective and purpose women choose to step into, the less energy we have to expend trying to explain to men our value, or trying to win our place on the planet or whatever. When we know it deep in our own spirits, we lose the need to do anything to convince or persuade or cajole or flirt or any of the rest of it. We lose that. Yeah.
That's the key. Yeah, that's crucial. Thank you.
Thank you, Sue.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
What a great question.
Excellent questions, and questions that probably all or many women ask themselves on a regular basis.
Absolutely. Let's take another caller here from Allen's Park in Colorado. Hello?
Hi.
What's your name?
Candace.
Hi, Candace.
Thank you so much. This is so wonderful. You had asked Susan earlier, how do we step up and how do we get to this place? And she gave some really good examples, but she's just touched on it, that last statement that she made. What came up in me was, in my experience, I have been fighting to know who I am, and a huge piece of that has been to fully take responsibility for my life. And for me, it was about healing the woundedness about husband and father and those kinds of things, because I could always tell there was a little something. I always wanted a little help, somebody coming to do something to take care of me, because I didn't get it as a kid. But I have just done, my whole life has been about the journey, but just done some huge healing and kind of put a piece of my soul back. And I've been integrating for the last 2 months and been in huge transition. But what has changed for me is now I have this rock solid piece of me in my gut. And I don't need to do those things that talk about being less than, where I'm jealous of another woman, or I'm looking for someone to save me, which I think we've been put in that role by necessity in a lot of ways, and it's changing. But I would like to hear your comment. I think the first piece is we have to know who we are. We have to be who we are. We have to have that confidence that, and it's not, it's more than confidence. It's that knowing that I am it for me in my life. And if I happen to love somebody, wonderful. Or if I happen to have some good friends, wonderful. But I have to be the final arbiter of who I am. And that, for me, has required a huge amount of personal work, personal growth, struggle, and all kinds of things that I've intentionally done in my life for a long, long time, and I think it would change for every woman. But it's the women who, the ones that she was talking about earlier, the earlier caller, the women who do the attacking, the ones we have to look out for. In my experience, those have been the women who are deeply wounded and have specifically not looked at their own lives, but carried that woundedness, and they could see that I was not willing to do that, that I was at least trying to find my own authority and power, and they just cannot deal with that, and they're the ones that come after. But other women who are strong, who have a sense of who they are, who have their own, have integrated their own self-responsibility, their own self-soul, however, it's hard for me to know how to talk about this yet, but those are the women that they have no problem with me. I could be the most powerful person in the world, and they're okay because they have their own power. So,
you know, Candace, this is such a, and congratulations on doing such important work on yourself. I mean, when you said I have this rock solid piece of myself back, wow, that just about brings me to tears. What a wonderful thing. And thank you so much for sharing that. And, you know, I think what I'm hearing and what you're talking about comes back to what I was saying earlier about the importance of creating relationship with ourselves. As you said, we have to know who we are, and we have to look at our woundedness, and we have to look at all the places where we are afraid that we are not enough. Because until we do that, we can't fully heal. And when you were talking about the women who would attack because they feel you getting so strong, it reminds me of someone told me about a tiny little crab that he says is found on the East Coast. I don't know this for certain, but he assures me this is true. And he says they're called American crabs. And he says they're tiny little things, and you can go out crabbing and get a whole bunch of them and put them in a jar, and they'll all crawl all over each other for a while in a big heap. But eventually one will start trying to crawl up the inside of the jar to get out. And he said you can watch, and as others notice that this one is beginning to move toward the top of the jar to get out, the others in the heap will reach up with their pincers and grab that one and pull it back down into the heap.
Wow.
Which I thought was so astonishing, because, you know, human beings do this. Because certainly if you get strong, if you heal and find that rock solid piece of yourself and move beyond the pain and the woundedness and the fear that I am experiencing, then I have to take responsibility for the fact that I'm not doing that. So it's easier to attack you and try to keep you in that small place. I think it's easier to do that than to do the work necessary to heal myself. So you know, this is another place where it's crucial for us to be able to recognize the pain that's being expressed when that happens, and to bless and release those who have not yet chosen to do the work they need to do to heal. And one other quick thing I wanted to mention here in reference to something you said about, you know, taking responsibility for yourself. It made me think of a client I worked with many years ago who had always been taken care of by men, by her father and then by her husband and that sort of thing. And the men didn't really take her seriously. She was sort of an ornament. But they handled everything for her, and so she, of course, grew up feeling incompetent, cute and perky, but incompetent. And she came into work with me and talked about how her husband had left her, and now she had no one to take care of her, and it was very scary and that sort of thing. And we did some work in which I had her actually visualize the husband who had left, and do some work to say goodbye to him and to bless him on his way to do work out the things he needed to work out. And then I asked her to turn around and look at a closed door. This is in her visualization, knowing that the person who was going to take full responsibility of and care of her for the rest of her life was positioned behind that door and was waiting, so eager. To open the door and to embrace her and to be with her forever. And I had her open the door, and, of course, on the other side was herself.
Wow. And I wonder if you can give some more guidance about how that's done, because it would be different for each person. But I think, for me, it's been intention, courage, willingness to live in the truth and deal with that immediate pain when I look and see, wow, I've really failed, and what do I do now in not being the person that I've wanted to be, and also being willing to ask for support. And in all of that process, what you were talking about earlier, learning to love myself, and by grace it has been happening. But I wonder, I think the journey is probably different for each woman, but what would you add to that list for women to think about? Because it takes, I think, a huge intention and courage to do this work.
It takes huge intention. It takes, I believe, it takes great commitment. And I believe it also takes passion. I think it takes passion for life. It takes passion for living that fuller, expanded life. And one of the things that I ask women to do in this process is to step into the feelings that come with being that courageous, healed, forward-looking, passionate, competent, joyful person. And even if we feel we have never had those experiences, the unconscious mind can step us into that place where it is as if I am that person. And by stepping into that and actually having that experience of those feelings, the feelings begin to make it our own. They begin to move through us and allow us to begin to function as the person we are imagining ourselves to be. It takes it to a very different level than an intellectual pursuit or even, an emotional sort of a thing, when we can actually experience the feelings that come with being who we choose to be, everything begins to open up.
That's amazing. You're a gift to all of us. Thank you so much, Susan.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm so glad you were on the call.
Thank you. Susan, that was just wonderful.
Thank you so much.
And we're running out of time, but there's just one question that's come through on the webcast I absolutely want to engage. So.
Sure.
This is from Nancy in Louisville. I so agree that women need to be empowered and helped to move beyond thinking of themselves as small. But something troubles me. It seems that mother with a small M, i.e. at home with family, is really where the healing of the human planet really and practically speaking takes place. Healing chronic disease, greeting the marketplace with a shopping list, changing autism. Even the gifts and strengths of the feminine have have surely come, at least in part, from being the traditional caregiver, the soother, the manager of the whole home life. The difficulty seems to come in how a culture views the small m caregiver. If women stand up for the equally important role of nurturer versus provider, would we not help ourselves in a broad sense and automatically move out of our small thinking?
Well, I absolutely agree that that role of mother with a small m is perhaps the noblest role that we have to us on the human plane. I am a mother and a grandmother and raised children by myself, and certainly have experienced what it's like to be that caregiver and provider and everything that comes with it, every opportunity to nurture and enrich and even help transform in that role. I am not talking about one or over the other. What I am talking about is what happens when we take those wonderful nurturing skills that we demonstrate at home within our own family, and we allow them to radiate outward into the larger family, not instead of at home with our family, not degrading any of that or allowing anyone else to. But again, this comes with choosing to think from that larger context about who we are. When we are absolutely clear about the power of the nurturing work that we are doing as mothers at home with our children, other people's concerns about whether or not what we're doing is enough cease to be particularly important. But it has to do with our getting so clear at so deep a level about the power of how we are expressing ourselves and being that conduit for the divine expression in everything we're doing, down to going to the grocery store and doing the laundry and scrubbing the toilet. All of those things can be done with this great nobility, with great honor. And that is where the noble part of who we are has its great foundation in the human experience, as far as I'm concerned.
Mm, beautiful. And one last thing that I'd like to ask you, Susan, before we end, is just how you see authentic feminine power. I know we've been talking about so many of the different dimensions of it, but just
sure.
The essence of that.
I see authentic feminine power being rooted in our capacity for deep wisdom, and this is part of the archetypal crone, being able to and choosing to look and listen and understand beneath the surface for the deeper meaning in whatever is being said and done around us, and there is always a deeper meaning. Being willing to recognize the greater need around us, being willing to be so aware and so present in the moment that our senses are taking in a huge amount of information at all times that we can use then in taking that deep wisdom and shaping with that deep wisdom and with our awareness, shaping meaningful action that brings change and healing to our families, to our communities, and to the planet. So it's action shaped by wisdom, compassion, and awareness.
Beautiful. Susan, I'm just so grateful to you for your decades of devotion and extraordinary work and tireless activism, both on inner and outer levels with individuals and communities and these larger distinctions about women's leadership that you're bringing forward. It's such an extraordinary service to us, as is the example of who you are and your beingness and willingness to step up and be living inside this larger calling.
Thank you so much, Claire, and I am so honored to be part of this series and to be part of this work, this great noble work that you and Catherine are doing in the world. When this is a wonderful example of what can happen when women of like mind come together. Mm. And the work that the two of you are doing is life-changing work, and I appreciate that so much.
Mm. Well, thank you so much, and I look forward to staying connected and to hearing about the launch of your book and letting everyone in our community know about it when it comes out as well. But I'm wondering if you can tell us just one more time about the event that you have coming up and where people can go to find out more about your work.
Absolutely. Thank you. They can go to our website at Thinking Like the Big Dogs, and there they can sign up for the newsletter. They can also register for our upcoming free teleseminar about this larger mindset that we've been talking about, and they can email us with the words Find Your Power in the subject line, and we will put them on our list to get more information to as the details for our upcoming women's event continue to take shape. It's going to be a truly life-changing event, and it's so exciting, and the women who are going to be participating here as speakers and teachers are just extraordinary. I can hardly wait to bring this event and this wonderful cast of women to women everywhere.
Mm. Well,
so
thank you so much.
Come to the site and sign up. And thank you so much, Claire. This has just been wonderful, and I've so much appreciated the opportunity.
Well, much support, many blessings for all that you're working on, and I look forward to staying connected and hearing what you're up to.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Bye-bye.
Good night. So thanks, everyone, for joining us this evening. If you'd like to dive deeper into the conversation at the Evolutionary Women's Cafe, you need to register for that separately. It's a free event where you can engage in dialogue with women from around the world that have been listening to tonight's call. Just click on the link in the email that you received with the confirmation details about today's call, and you'll have all the instructions there about what you need to do to sign up. And we're going to hang up the phone in just a moment and dial back into the Evolutionary Women's Cafe on Maestro, where our program director, Paula Dow, will be facilitating the small group dialogues. So just before we end, if you have women friends that you would like to invite to join this global evolutionary sisterhood, and you're inspired as we are by the potential for this momentous gathering, we'd invite you to share the email that you received with the details about today's call and an invitation to sign up with as many women as you can. And if you're interested in diving deeper into the conversation online, you can join our Facebook group. Just go to facebook.com and search for Feminine Power Global Community. We'll click on the link in the email we sent you with the details about today's call. And if someone sent you this audio or you found it in some hidden corner of the Internet and you'd like to listen to the other dialogues in the series, just visit femininepower.com. And finally, I want to thank our team at Feminine Power and all the sponsors who have made this event possible, including our co-sponsors, Integral Enlightenment, Agape International Spiritual Center, Enlighten Next, Next Step Integral Hub, Humanity Unites Brilliance, Awakening the Impulse to Evolve, and the Great Integral Awakening. And we look forward to being with you on Saturday for another dialogue with an evolutionary woman leader. Until that time, keep evolving and co-creating the future of our world. Lots of love, and jump onto the Evolutionary Cafe if you'd like to join us there now. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.